Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. Yes, it's going to be a great show today. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And you probably recognize these two guys in the show. It's their first time on the show together, so I can absolutely make no promises. I know there's already chemistry that I have experienced before the show started, so I know it's going to be a great show. So we have Chief Chris Noller from the Pueblo Police Department, and also retired Chief Ralph Ornelas. He's formerly with LA Sheriff's Office, not the PD, but the Sheriff's Office, you know, because they know how they get it done at the SO. And he retired there as a commander, then became a police chief. He didn't go far. He stayed in California. He's still there now, actually. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. Appreciate it. And a shout out to our sponsors. You know, our sponsors go to the great lengths to bring the show to you. So, guys, please support our sponsors. We have our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, and they are our satellite sponsor. And then Aero Precision USA, arms, guns, love it. Then GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And, yes, thanks to them, we're streaming to over a million people right now. Also, TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. You can get cool gear like the shirt I'm wearing. And FishOrlandoBass.com. And Zach has got a bass fishing charter in Orlando. So when you're taking the wife and the kids or the grandkids to Disney, all you have to do is drop them off and head over and hook up with Zach on the bass fishing charter. Or if you're feeling more adventurous, you can do alligator hunting and catch and relocate alligators. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press at TampaEP.com, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what's on the radar? What are we going to be talking about today? We got Kash Patel. We're on the verge of exposing Antifa's funding network. Guys, this is some serious news, especially when there's some maybe some nonprofits, you know, or businesses with nonprofit status, you know, or 501c3s in here that are going to get jammed up. This is going to be big. We also have unions and truckers are suing the FMCSA over a new rule that restricts illegal immigrant CDLs. So, you know, all these commercial truck drivers that we found out that the standards have been lifted, and we got a lot of these illegals that are driving trucks and they're having accidents and killing people. They don't speak English and don't know how the signs work. And the roadways, well, yeah, you got groups out here that are trying to turn that around. They want the illegals driving. And then we got a suspect who charged at an officer with a knife after rear-ending a parked cruiser in front of the police station. He ends up being wounded in a shooting. This is a pretty bizarre intentional act. We got a canine from North Las Vegas police. We're going to have a canine video, guys. We got some serious biting going on. Let's just put it that way. You guys are going to want to watch that. And we've also got a Georgia sheriff suspended by Governor Brian Kemp. We've got a driver in a stolen car. There's a chase, but he attempts to dislodge the grappler device. Doesn't work out so well. And then we've got in New York, former state trooper who falsely claimed that he was shot on duty. He gets 6 months in jail. And then it goes on. If we have time to get to the Bridgeport officer justifying the shooting of a guy that ran at him with a couple of knives. And then a Michigan PD chief rescinds the ICE partnership, but it's due to staff shortages. And kind of a sad story, you know, that one, I think. So we've got about 7.5 minutes. So let's start off with the main topic. And guys, look, if you want to take anything out of order, there's a story that you want to make sure that we cover, let me know up front so we can make sure that we get to it. But rvmnews.com, which is Red Voice Media, Kash Patel, we're on the verge of exposing Antifa's funding network. Now, we know that they've been identified and classified as a domestic terrorist organization. And we know that, you know, every cop knows you don't have to work organized crime or public corruption, know that you just follow the trail of the money, right? So Kash Patel said on Wednesday that the Bureau is close to identifying the financial networks and leadership structures that are behind Antifa. And of course, Antifa is no friend of law enforcement. In an interview with Just the News, Patel, who's our new FBI director, stated that the FBI's investigation that they've uncovered indications that foreign adversaries, you heard that correctly, that they may be supporting Antifa and similar domestic extremist groups. So we've got it on both sides. And here's a quote saying, there are indications that support for anti-American radical groups is coming from America's enemies that are overseas. And the Bureau is following the money. And I love it because they're bringing the receipts. Patel said the investigators, they're also looking at possible domestic sources of support, including U.S.-based nonprofits that are operating under IRS tax-exempt status. Now, why does he mention that? Because that tax exempt status is getting ready to get to be a flyby, right? It's going to go. Look, the thing I can tell you, and this is from Kash Patel, is that the money doesn't lie. And the thing we're doing at the FBI is following the money. And it's really, I say it's simple. The concept's simple. It's you know, you've got to really, you've got to be a guy that's good at that and loves doing that. I would not be the guy that tracked the money down. But Patel also is giving thanks to President Trump because Antifa, of course, have been designated as a domestic terror organization, and that now they have multiple investigations that are going on. And according to Patel, the investigations involve tracing financial transactions, identifying intermediaries, and exposing the flow of funds that support Antifa's organizational activity. So there's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of moving parts. And guys, I think that we're going to get an announcement sooner than later. Ralph, you want to start us off on this?
Yeah, I number one, I like what Patel is doing with the FBI because it's right. Follow the money. I mean, when I headed up a MS-13 investigation and a Mexican mafia investigation with the feds, we had an IRS investigate along with us, and it led to a lot of different companies they were involved in, funneling money and stuff back and forth to the border, and also private businesses they were running in California and all the way through Chicago. So I believe that it's the right thing to do. And you know something? This is where great investigators insert themselves and really find out, get in the weeds and really find out where it's going. And then mapping and tracking. And I'm looking forward to hearing more from this. I can tell you this, a friend of mine worked on an Antifa investigation, and she prosecuted people down in San Diego federally on the 2020 Antifa you know, disturbances, riots, and what they did in our country.
Thanks, Chief. Chief Chris.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, having done some drug cases where really the money was the thing that tipped us off to some of the other issues that were related to that case, I'm glad to see now the level of cooperation between the federal agencies. And it's been over several years, but yeah. Back in the day, it was, you know, DEA had their thing, FBI had their thing, IRS did their thing, ATF did their thing, et cetera, et cetera. And what I think you're seeing now, and I think that the ability to track this money through Antifa is probably greatly enhanced by this, but the three-letter agencies working much better together and coordinating what they're doing. Like Ralph, I worked a case, a drug case, where we brought in an IRS investigator to help us track money and do that kind of stuff. And the results of what you can come up with are incredible. And I have zero doubt that there are foreign nationals, foreign governments that are helping fund some of this disruptive activity in our country. It's to their advantage to do so, you know, especially people that aren't our allies, you know, and don't share our beliefs in freedom and democracy and all that. And it, I think it absolutely is a coordinated effort. And I'm glad to see that finally we're looking at that.
Yeah, I got to admit, I was surprised, Ralph, when I saw that. I honestly hadn't thought about the foreign adversaries being behind a group like Antifa. I'm thinking George Soros and others, some domestic groups. But yeah, wow.
Chip. I'm sorry, Chip, no, and Chris. You know, my college professor, Harvey Cushing, wrote a book, Holy War and Homefront. And after 9/11, him and an FBI agent did all the research, money's coming from the Middle East, funneling money into colleges of the United States, primarily on the East Coast, advocating a certain philosophical thinking, which, look at, we're paying the price right now. And you know something? The FBI was going after for a while and then was pulled back.
Yeah, they did, started doing that with the East Coast when they ran out of money on the West Coast. They did they spent the initial money on the West Coast, and when they completed that job very quickly, they changed everybody's mind. I'm pulling your chain, Ralph. I'm trying to make it sound like after they wasted all their money on the West Coast and they moved over to the East Coast when they got done with you guys. But no, it's fascinating stuff. Chief Noller.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say something along the lines of what Ralph just said, but I think what I think they're going to find is that some of these names that you mentioned a few minutes ago were tied in with these foreign nationals. Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to slander anybody. I just think that this goes way deeper than people really think.
We've already heard the connection of the dots. I mean, verbally, I haven't seen anything, you know, a lot physically supporting that. But I suspect you're right.
Now, don't misunderstand me. I think that there are people that, you know, are Americans and they have certain feelings about things, and they're also participating in some of these protests and whatnot. But they're not the ones that are causing the problems. They're there actually trying to peacefully protest and speak out against what they think is wrong in our country. And I don't have an issue with that. it's the violent offend the violent extremists. It's the people that are trying to encourage people to be disruptive, to destroy property and all these other things that I think are where the problem lies. And you end up with 100 people. It takes about 3 or 4 to get the majority of that crowd to act one way or the other. And those people that have nefarious designs are the ones that are taking the money that we're talking about here today.
Good point.
Hey, Chip, look at Ireland, what's going on in Ireland right now.
Good point. Well, perfect timing, guys. It's up for our first commercial break, so stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And, guys, you know, we buy our gear from a lot of different sources, and when you consider going online, it's almost limitless, right, as far as choices go. But I want to remind everybody about what's really important here. It's supporting the companies that actually support us, law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proudly serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. Not only that, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And hey, we're not done yet. They're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they've given me a radio code that I'm about to give to you, and that will get you 15% off your next order at Gauls.com. It's Radio 15, so type in Radio 15 in order to get 15% off your next order. I see Chief Chris typing it in right now. Look, he's writing that down. That is Radio 15 at Gauls.com. And they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones, Gauls.com. All right, now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And hey, they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, and that stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com, and watch the cool videos as well. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Chris Noller from Pueblo and Chief Ralph Ornelas from California. Thanks so much for being on the show, guys. And
thank you.
I know that, I've got an update article that I want to get to, but I know that Chief Ralph had something that he wanted to go in and mention that he's got lined up after the day. And I know that he talks a lot publicly about fentanyl, and he books seminars and he's saving lives. So Chief Ralph, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chip. And thank you, Chris, and the audience. Today I do a presentation with Robin's Nest. Robin's Nest is a foundation that help young teenagers when they're displaced, not unhoused, but also they use a person like myself to go around to Orange County, LA County, to speak on presentation about dangers of fentanyl. So I'm going to Early College High School today in Costa Mesa. I'm honored to do that. And again, just want to save lives. I'm still continuing to try to be a public servant.
Love it.
Thank you, Chip. Thank you, Chris.
Well, you got it. So, hey guys, so we've got, and look, I'm going to cover this FMCSA one, the people that want the illegals to be able to drive with the CDLs. But if there's anything else you want me to restructure or take things out of order, let me know. But Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, unions and truckers, they sue FMCSA over a new rule that restricts illegal immigrant CDL. So this is not it's a newer story, but everybody's familiar with it around the country. We all remember the California trucker that had the accident in Florida. And we had a family that got killed, and he just, to his detriment, he had a camera in the cab, and it showed his lack of expression or remorse from inside the cab. Didn't help his cause at all. So we have two of the nation's largest public employee unions that are fighting this. So listen to this. We got the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. So not many people know about that. And the American Federation of Teachers, though, AFT. They're fine. They've joined two individual commercial drivers in filing a lawsuit. They're challenging the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration's new emergency rule. It severely restricts who is eligible for non-domiciled CDLs, commercial driver's licenses. Now, the petition for review was filed October the 20th, so very recently, in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. It targets the organizations, the FMCSA's interim final rule, restoring integrity to the issuance of non-domiciled or non-citizens commercial driver's licenses, which took immediate effect upon its publication in the Federal Register on September 29th, 2025. So the new rule has been enacted in response to a nationwide compliance review that uncovered widespread state errors in issuing non-domiciled CDLs in a series of fatal crashes involving non-citizen drivers. And these guys, all the guys I saw were illegals. And so they're just trying to fix that problem. But notice I said a series of fatal crashes involving these non-citizens. So the rule significantly tightens the eligibility. It limits new and renewing non-domiciled CDLs only to foreign nationals, but they have to hold specific employment-based visas. And it names them what kind of visas that they have, and explicitly making individuals with only an employment authorization document, including asylum seekers and refugees and DACA recipients. Those people are all ineligible. And so, but now we've got these two organizations that are fighting that. It goes on to mention the petitioners, you got George Rivera Lawan and Alekisa Simonowski, both commercial drivers named, you know, they're following the suit, and these other corporations are kind of backing on, and they're saying that there's going to be a huge, you know, fallout from truckers. We're not going to have enough truckers to be able to, you know, get our goods around the country because of how this is going to adversely affect the non-citizens, and that no one's using the word illegal here. But I'm curious what you guys think about this, Chief Chris.
You know, I mean, not to put too fine of a point on it, but there is laws on how people enter our country and what they can do while they're here. And I don't know that that it makes a whole lot of sense to have people that we know should not be legally in our country driving semi trucks and stuff. What I would like to see, though, is while we're enforcing our immigration laws, is us looking at ways we can speed up if, and I don't know, I don't drive a semi truck, so I don't know what the issue is with drivers. And I know there's a shortage, but is there a way we can speed up a process of somebody becoming, getting a visa, a work visa in order to do this type of work, and that sort of thing. I think we need to do a better job of doing a two-pronged approach to our immigration issue. And one is enforcing our immigration laws, and the other is trying to look at ways we can help accelerate people that want to be in this country lawfully, getting those visas, getting those work permits that they need so that they can do the drive semi trucks or work in semiconductor plants or whatever. And I think that's where I would like to see the approach change a little bit on the other side of that. So,
like, and you know, and thanks, Chief, Chief Chris, Chief Ralph. I've read that there's a severe issue with the language barrier and with not being able to read English or speak English, you know, on the roadways and stuff. And I'm seeing here we have a comment from Betty Dunn saying illegals shouldn't have any of our privileges. And of course, Chief Chris was just saying, yeah, let's firm up the process, let's streamline it so that, yeah. And I'm all that, my wife's Colombian, her family came over here legally, and her mom became a citizen, but she learned the language, even though she had that thick Colombian accent. I still couldn't understand her. She knew English. So Chief Ralph.
No, I agree with the statements by Chief Chris. I think it has to do with the right way. Number one, I don't believe we should give a legal document to an illegal person. And that was commentary back in the early 2000s when California wanted to give, driver's licenses to illegals. And I also think it's interesting is that we really truly need to drill down on vetting through these people coming across the country who want a visa. And, you know, some look at all the friends of mine who came over from Middle East or Central America or Mexico who follow the law and waited so long to become American citizens are proud of it. And, I tell you this, gentlemen in the audience, when I worked in Central America and Mexico, my friends right now still email me from those two locales and say, Ralph, how could you could not become, Ralph, get a license or a Dewey card. A Dewey card in Central America is like a driver's license. You don't qualify for it. So, you know, we're giving things out right now, and I think it's dangerous because we don't know the true intentions of some of these people who were not vetted through.
Perfect timing. I love it. Well, thanks so much, guys. We got plenty more coming up. It's time for our second commercial break, though. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. It's time to talk about Arrow Precision and introducing Arrow Defense by Arrow Precision at arrowprecisionusa.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Arrow Defense by Arrow Precision demands perfection because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit arrowprecisionusa.com for a lineup that matches every discipline because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4 E1 Pro and the Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market last year at arrowprecisionusa.com. The embodiments of duty rifle excellence now being tailored for the civilian customer. That means that now you can start getting your hands on the primo stuff. And their M5 AR 308 platform, spectacular. Don't settle for less when you can have the best. arrowprecisionusa.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're joined by two chiefs today, Chief Ralph Ornelas from the California side of the country, and then we got Chief Chris Noller from Pueblo, Colorado. So, hey, thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. And we have been talking about, we've had some really great topics. This last one involving CDLs, commercial driver's license, and the move that was just, and I mean, extremely recent, the move that was made in order to limit the ability for certain states, California is the first one on the list, California, but also New York and Washington State, but issuing out these DLs and stuff. And now we've got some groups, including the Federal Teachers Association, that have jumped on the bandwagon behind two people that are suing so that it can't be done. So any final words on that? Are you guys ready to jump on to the next one?
I'd like to jump on to the next one. I'll let Chris start that one off.
Well, the next one here, let me just run through it here. We've got we'll make it the sheriff instead of, we normally go to a video story next, but we're going to have to, we can't let this one slip by. So AtlantaNewsFirst.com, Georgia sheriff suspended by Governor Brian Kemp. And this is Atlanta, Georgia. So the North Georgia sheriff, whose physical confrontation with a local police officer. So remember, for people that are listeners on the show, you got sheriff's offices and then you've got, police departments, right? And the police departments normally operate within the jurisdiction of a sheriff's office, but they outline responsibilities for who's enforcing what within what jurisdiction. So, but the sheriff's office, they do have jurisdiction everywhere within the city that's within their purview. That doesn't work the same way with the police department. So this sheriff, not a sheriff's deputy, but the sheriff had an issue with a police officer. So it's Sheriff Kenneth Henderson, and it gets suspended as a direct result, according to an article in the Atlanta News First Edition. Well, they say that it was reported, the incident was reported between Henderson, who is the sheriff, and a Hiawassee police officer named Jose, is Carvajal. And Carvajal? Okay, so I would just call him Officer Jose. So just over 24 hours after Atlanta News First Chief Investigator Brendan Keefe's initial report aired on September the 18th, the Georgia Sheriff's Association sent a letter to the governor, Governor Kemp, requesting that he appoint a committee of two sheriffs and an AG, Attorney General, to investigate the sheriff Henderson's apparent misconduct, a high degree of unprofessionalism, and possible criminal behavior which occurred in that back in December of 2024, so less than a year ago. And it goes on to say that they have body cam footage revealing the confrontation between the sheriff and the police officer that was at the scene of a shooting. So let me just kind of cut to the chase here. We got a sheriff deputy that ends up getting shot and injured, and we got a police officer. Remember how I just said the jurisdiction thing goes? So the police officer leaves the jurisdiction of a city. He's still within the county, but he doesn't have law enforcement jurisdiction. But he goes there, but it doesn't matter. He's going at the back. He's going to help save the life or help a brother officer. So I don't care if he's crossing state lines. I mean, this is what we do. And so anyhow, so he's going there. He helps apply a tourniquet to cut off the blood flow to save the deputy's life. And in this, apparently he ended up grabbing a gun and putting it in his holster, but the guns got mixed up and he grabs the injured deputy's gun and put it in his holster. And the sheriff shows up and has a big issue about that. And so the officer didn't realize that he'd done it. So the first responders told him, hey, just keep the gun. He put it in his waistband. And then he put his gun in his holster, but now the sheriff wants the gun. And the officer that doesn't work for the sheriff tells him, look, I'm not touching this gun again until the Georgia Bureau of Investigation gets here. You know, that state agency that's going to be investigating, because then he realizes that he's actually has already touched the evidence in the case and that they're going to want to take control over it. But he doesn't want to, he understands at least the chain of custody that has to exist in this kind of stuff. Apparently, I'll let you guys address whether the sheriff did or did not. So anyhow, I'm just trying to cut because the story is such a long story. It talks about the officer being a combat veteran. He was in the Navy and the Army and responded to the shooting out of his jurisdiction and stuff. The deputy was Austin Bradburn. And so anyhow, anything that I left out, please cover. But Chief Ralph Ornelas, you want to start us off on this one?
No, I think Chris could go first and I'll add to it after he speaks.
Thanks, Chris. I cannot in any situation understand a executive that behaves this way. I would never tolerate one of my officers getting into a fight with another law enforcement officer, either on our department or in another agency, and then let alone putting hands on the guy. You know, there's just zero excuse for that. A mistake was made. I think what I would be more concerned about had I showed up on that scene as the chief of police is how is my officer? Do I need to go to the hospital? The evidence stuff will sort itself out. That could be an issue. I don't think it's gonna be a very big issue. It's certainly not an issue that's worth me yelling at another department's, officer or deputy over, even if it's mildly frustrating. I mean, we know where the evidence is. We can explain how the evidence end up where it is. And we can ensure that it hasn't been tampered with because there's all these other deputies around. And I can't imagine for the life of me how embarrassed my officers would be if I showed up on a scene and behaved like that. That guy has no business being in charge of anybody but himself. And frankly, I don't think he should be the sheriff anymore. And I mean, that may be harsh, but I'll tell you this, I don't know that my mayor would tolerate me acting that way all over body-worn camera and that I would get to keep my job if I behaved like that. It's just unacceptable. It's poor leadership. And you as a chief executive, you try to instill certain values into your employees about how we behave, what the things that we will and will not tolerate. And then I can't believe that he didn't do those. And maybe he didn't. I mean, based on his behavior, maybe he doesn't care about that kind of stuff. I don't know. But and then you go out there and your cops have to take all this stuff from people that treat them like garbage and just smile and say, thank you. Have a good day. And then you show up and just come uncorked. I mean, that is like one of the worst examples of leadership I've ever seen, to be honest with you.
And I didn't say it in the, and I probably should have, there was a physical altercation going on between the sheriff on the sheriff's side. Not the officer didn't want any part of it. He didn't want any part of this. There were actually deputies holding the sheriff back that was trying to lay hands on the officer. That didn't work for him. And it was, I got to admit there by any stretch of the imagination, this was bad. The optics, they looked horrible, but even the sheriff's own deputies were just, they were at a loss. I mean, and of course I have sympathy for them because here they are, their boss, they're having to hold him back and they probably saved him because I don't know what would have happened if they wouldn't have held him back. I don't know how far down the rabbit hole he would have gone with putting his hands
going to jail, but they certainly weren't able to save him from what I think ought to be career suicide right here. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want to, if he kept his job as sheriff, I would be looking for another place to go work.
Absolutely.
I would not want to work for that guy. Because what's he doing to them? How's he treating them in the house, you know?
Now, well, first of all, I think you articulated it very clearly, Chris. Good job on that. And I agree with everything you said. You know, the other thing is this, been at shootings and numerous detectives, you know, been shot when I was a gang lieutenant. The sheriff doesn't come to the crime scene. The sheriff goes to the hospital to be with the family, the concern I know I did as a chief. I know probably you do the same thing, Chris. You let your lieutenants, you let your sergeants, your homicide investigators do all the investigation. You go support the family, supports it. And, you know, some, there's other underlying things with this sheriff between Hiwassee Police Department. And you, we other, you know, during the video, other interviews the reporter showed, and previously he has some angst against this police department. He was recorded by one of his deputies in his office saying how, hey, why do you have a problem here? You should be hanging out and having lunch with these people. The other thing is this, we're going to find out. The deputy shot himself. I mean, that's a whole nother story. We're gonna, if it goes evolves to another article we have in New York State, what is with that? But, you know, to put that Carvajal in the back seat handcuffed, that was despicable. And the deputies who are on the sideline saying, hey, I'm not changing my story. I'm going to stick to what's morally right. You know, I commend those deputies because that's not easy to do, to go in against an arrogant sheriff. And that's what it is. It's arrogance and ego that this sheriff took this position. And who knows, maybe he had a couple of whiskeys before he rolled out there that night. I don't know.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for the commentary. I appreciate it. I know that we've got a commercial break coming up shortly, but if it's okay with you, and we may, you know what, I'm going to try to get to that story involving the trooper coming up next. But, well, I mean, after we cover a story with a video component, we actually have a pretty amazing video story that I want to get to. So let me just, if it's okay with you guys, let me just kind of whet the appetite on that first one. At rumble.com is where we got it, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have a suspect who charges at a police officer after rear-ending a parked cruiser. He's wounded in the shooting. How he survived, I don't know. But guys, this is one of the videos that you're actually going to want to watch. I'll tell you how you can do that as well. Stick with us. Commercial break. We'll be right back. Hi, guys. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affieco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you have your own agency, if you're a chief or a sheriff, Daniel Kelly, the founder, has got a deal for you. You can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. And again, that website, it is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're joined by two police chiefs. We got Chief Chris Noller from the Pueblo Police Department in Colorado, and also Chief Ralph Ornelas from retired from California. And I just kind of whet the appetite on this next story. There's a video component to it. Suspect who charged at an officer with a knife after rear-ending a parked police cruiser is wounded in the shooting. There are some tells in this that I picked up on that I will make sure our audience knows about. So we got a sheriff's office and a police department involved in this. So the Macomb County Sheriff's Office said that they have determined that the officer involved shooting outside of the Roseville Police Department earlier in the month was justified. And they released a surveillance video and body cam video. It shows a suspect. He has a Pontiac G5 and he rams it into the back of the patrol SUV that's parked right in front of the police station. It says that the police officers, well, the second time he rammed it, the officers inside the second time, but let's go and start off with the first. This guy's driving in the parking lot. He drives by this police cruiser that's parked in front of the station, and then he hits his brake and pulls up beside the car, and then he backs up, and then he does a slow rolling tap into the bumper, right? But there was nobody in the car. Backs away, and now we got three officers that are leaving the station, and they're filing out, and they saw this on video or whatever, and they're gonna interact with this guy who's no longer there. He left the parking lot. Well, all of a sudden they get in their cars. The same dude comes back in his Pontiac G5. I didn't even know what a G5 was until I watched the video. And yeah, and he's not doing a little love tap this time. He's got speed, and he like crashes into the back of the police SUV.
Stay right there. Put the car in park. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa. Drop the knife now. Drop the knife. Drop the knife.
Drop it. Drop it. Drop the knife. Drop the fucking knife.
Drop the knife.
Drop the fucking knife.
Tyler, close my door.
No, fuck the tape.
Drop the knife. Drop the knife. Drop it! Drop the knife! Drop the fucking knife! Drop the fucking knife! Drop the fucking
knife! Lurch is in forward. You can see on the surveillance camera, and this thing just like, it was so fast that it knocks him forward, almost, I think, into the car in front of him, and the whole hood and everything on the G5, the suspect's car just like crumbles and stuff. And so that's the way this happens. And so that car is not going anywhere. So now we're moving to body cams, and they're kind of surrounding this bad guy and ordering him to get out of the car and stuff. So now I'm going to go to my notes stuff. So all these cops, they're in uniform, and we're at the 1 minute and 34 second. And so they're dealing with a suspect. And this is right after he accelerates at high rate of speed, and he hits the police car that he just given a little love tap 2 seconds earlier. And now we've got the first body cam officer. He's telling another officer to close his door. You know, this officer's in a white pickup truck, and he drives up after he watches this Ram, but he misses a golden opportunity to pin the driver's door close. And because there's no reason to believe this guy's armed at this point, but he drives past the driver's door of the bad guy's car, and then he opens up his pickup truck door, and he gets out, and then he leaves, and then he goes to the rear of the truck. And so he realizes what he's done, and he's telling the other officer that's in front of his pickup truck that, hey, close that door, because now he realizes the bad guy's getting out, and he could likely get in that pickup truck, probably got weapons in there and stuff, and he's going to, you know, vamoose in his truck. So the officer does do that, and then the bad guy gets out with the knives and stuff, and then there's a shooting and stuff, but the bad guy ends up surviving. So the bad guy exits. He's got a knife with him, and there's 7 shots fired. They say that he was hit 6 times, and he survived so far, that could change. And so that's what we have. Chief Ralph, you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, to me, you know, charging this suspect premeditated, it shows, I got the video footage, him practicing what he's going to do, number one. I mean, he drives by 7 minutes later, he goes back again, and he practices a bump, and he goes back again. And it tells me a lot, Vince Mine, how he wants to injure an officer. So, I mean, you know, district attorney's office is going to take that in. Obviously, I'm only saying myself, tactically, that pickup truck, I would have went behind the suspect's vehicle, not alongside that. I would have went behind and tried to create a high risk stop, not be so close to that. Because yeah, anytime you're close to something like that, you're gonna, you know, the engagement, like God forbid, the guy could have got out, could have stabbed the officer and stuff. But other than that, the shooting is a justified shooting. Tactics wise, I think there's other things tactically I would have done differently. I would orchestrate, if I was a deputy or I was a sergeant on scene, would have had myself in the pickup truck with the other car come behind and the other deputy, because they looked like a crossfire in between that. The one officer in front and the other officer in the back of the pickup truck. And those are the things I look at all the time, because I never want to see us, God forbid, firing and hitting each other in friendly fire.
Well, I agree. I think a couple things. Number one, as administrators, I think this proves the value of having fenced in secure access lots where your officers are walking out after briefing, because that's the impression I got.
Me too.
Like maybe they were at briefing and came out of the building. And I think it supports and it may help administrators who've tried to get secured lots and maybe their council or their manager or their mayor's not understanding the importance of it. So number one, I hope that administrators in communities where they don't have secured lots are able to use this to fight for the idea of getting secured lots for their employees. Number two, I think what I would have done, Ralph, is I would have done what Chip talked about, and I would have hit the car on the driver's side door and pinned him in there, and then maybe had the follow-on units do the felony stop deal from the back end and have him crawl across the car, because you have a lot more control that way. Maybe hindsight's always 20/20, but I think the other issue is for officers that are walking into the parking lot for the 1 millionth time. This shows you need to have your head on a swivel. At all times, and as they say in the military, you need to stay frosty. You need to not allow yourself to get sucked into being complacent, because this is the 8 millionth time I've exited this door out to get in my patrol car, and there's never been an issue, especially in an unsecured lot. But even in secured lots, there's, you know, in the community where we live, there's large buildings around that people could take shots from, garages. So you just need to pay attention and not become complacent. And it's hard not to, because, you know, we're human beings, and, you know, we walk out of the back door how many times a week, to get into a car and go to a call or go home or come into work, load our vehicle up, all these things. But I think kind of maybe, and I don't want to speak for these cops, that it always sounds harsh when you come after somebody after they've been through something and you're sitting in a easy chair on the third floor. But, you know, I think it maybe if they were thinking about what could happen when I walk out this door, they may have approached it a little bit differently. And that guy probably would have done either what you're talking about, yeah, Ralph, or what Chip and I mentioned. And I bet they've had some conversations since then about what they're going to do if something like that happens again. And that's one of the great things about our profession is that we self-examine what we do and try to become better.
But we had six out of seven shots. That's the police stats just went up. Hey, we've got less than 2 minutes, and if you want me to cover that trooper story, we're going to have to do that real quick now.
Let me say one thing. Bill asked a question about the grappler and is it one time use? It is one time per deployment, but you can reuse pieces of it and replace parts of it to get wrapped up in the axle. So it is multi-use, but once it's deployed that time, you can't redeploy it.
All right. Interesting. I didn't even know that. So,
hey Chip, one thing that Chris brought up, maybe they do have back parking lot. Maybe they should change a policy, not having the cars parked in front, though, Chris and Chip. Okay.
New York.news12.com. Former state trooper falsely claimed that he was shot on duty, gets 6 months in jail. So I'm going to go through this fast, guys. We've got a minute and 15 seconds. Former state trooper admitted to lying about being shot in the line of duty. He's been sentenced to 6 months in jail and 5 years of probation. Thomas Macia, he pled guilty to several charges, including filing a false report. That'll definitely get you jammed up in law enforcement. Macia claimed he was shot in the Southern State Parkway by a dark-skinned man a year ago, and investigators later determined that he shot himself. And here's District Attorney Ann Donnelly said that he wanted sympathy, he wanted attention, and he didn't care what it cost to get it. Donnelly said that Macia's phone history was like staring right into his plan. She said there was a search for websites to buy guns online and an article on how it felt to be shot. The DA described the case as one of the most disgraceful breaches of trust that she's ever seen, and his sentence included mental health treatment, probation, and paying nearly $300,000 in restitution. Gentlemen, 30 seconds.
This is why we have trouble with trust in some communities is because of this kind of stuff. I think the agency needs to look at their onboarding process, their psychological process, and see where they missed the boat on identifying this guy as a psych risk. It's more of an art than a science, but that's where I would start if I was the chief or the head of that organization. And New York State is it troopers? I mean, that is not a low rent organization. They're a very squared away organization. So, you know,
I agree with you 100%.
Thank you so much, Chief Ornelas and Chief Noller. Thank you guys so much. I usually talk about the Wounded Blue at this point. Lieutenant Randy Sutton is 501c3, helping cops out of the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. So if you guys haven't checked out the Wounded Blue lately, please go to thewoundedblue.org and check that out. And they just had their summit, and they are really doing God's work. Hey, I also want to mention our sponsors. And guys, please support our sponsors. They go to great lengths to make this show available to you. And we've got Galls at Galls.com, ComplyTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, Gunlearn.com, Medicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, Two Bells, and Fish Orlando, Bass.com, the Bass Fishing Charter with Zach. Thanks so much again to Chief Ralph Ornelas and Chief Chris Noller for being on the show, and hope everybody has a great, safe week. We'll see you back on Monday, 12 noon Eastern.